Hello, everyone, and welcome to Linux Crazy Podcast. This is podcast number 79. I opened up Audacity to record the podcast, and as usual, I go ahead and test it to make sure that it's recording okay and the playback is okay. I need the playback enabled to so I can edit the podcast when I get done, because I have been known to leave a lot of ums and huhs and coughing and who knows what all in the podcast. So I try to clean it up a little bit before I go ahead and upload it. And Pulse Audio has been working fine here for the last few months. All of a sudden today, when I go to play back the little test recording, it wanted to fly through like it used to do at the beginning, when I first installed it, I don't know, maybe even a year or so ago. So, I don't know. To me, it doesn't seem like it's getting any better. It's about the same. It's 1 week or 1 month, it'll work pretty good. And then 1 week or 1 month later, it doesn't seem to work that well. I don't know if it has something to do with Audacity, working with the wrapper scripts for Pulse Audio. But it really is a pain in the neck. When this happens, every time I think I'm just going to go ahead and remove Pulse Audio. I tried that one time before when I first started having trouble with Pulse Audio. And for some reason, there's so many remnants of Pulse Audio that it's hard to get rid of it entirely. A lot of things stopped working because I uninstalled Pulse Audio, because they were already configured to use Pulse Audio. So when I uninstalled Pulse Audio, some other stuff stopped working, so I went ahead and installed it again. And that's when I started investigating to try to figure out how to get the problems ironed out. And for a while, I have the problems ironed out, and then all of a sudden, it just starts right back up again. So I don't know if something has changed in one of my updates that overwrote the configuration files. So maybe when I get done doing this podcast, I'll go ahead and check it out. It does playback, but it just takes a few attempts. It's very hit and miss in order to get it to play back. I have a test box that I do a lot of testing, as far as testing e-builds and testing stuff for Gentoo. It does not have Pulse Audio. I never installed it from the get-go, Pulse Audio, on that box. In fact, I have in the use flags, I have minus Pulse Audio, and the sound worked beautiful. I've been considering making that my main podcast box, and this box, making this box the test box. But that box is a lot more faster. It's got a quad processor, it's got 8 gig of RAM, and I just recently put in a new hard drive that I'm going to talk about during this podcast. So this box here is really better for a work box, because it's basically got a server motherboard, it's got a Opteron dual core processor, it's got 4 gig of RAM, and it's got a couple regular SATA hard drives in it. And it everything is fine. I like it fine, except for this Pulse Audio. If it gets me aggravated enough, I might just go ahead and try to uninstall it again. So we'll see what happens. It's really demoralizing for me, because sound should just work in Linux. I mean, it's awful embarrassing for me when you can't even get sound to play right. One of my buddies, I installed Ubuntu Studio on his computer, because he likes to record music and make music. So I installed that on there, and he's run across some of the same problems I run across with Pulse Audio and working with media files. Certain applications just don't work very well with Pulse Audio, and Pulse Audio wants to just hog everything. And I don't know, they can't seem to work everything out. For me, it seemed like it worked fine before. I might have to start using, get rid of Pulse Audio and start using Jack. The only thing, I haven't used Jack before, So it'd be a whole new learning curve. If it gets bad enough, that's what I'm going to do. I do have his box working now with the Pulse Audio and that. And what I had to do was I had to put a sound card that is supported better in Linux on his particular box. He had a HDA Intel sound card, you know, one of those onboard cards, and it just didn't really, the hardware mixing is just not, it wasn't really very good on those cards. Maybe they're getting better now, but it didn't, we had all kind of trouble with using the onboard audio sound card. And when I put in a sound card that's very well supported on Linux, in fact, I use these Turtle Beach Santa Cruz sound cards. They're older sound cards. In the day, they were like the high-end sound cards, but they still work good on Linux. So I've had good luck with that. I think some of the newer Sound Blaster cards are supposedly supported pretty good in Linux, but I haven't tried it yet. I don't try anything new too much unless you know, there's a real need for it. If I can get something that's known to work and good enough for me, then I'll stick with that. I just got a little USB wireless card that's supposedly well supported in Linux. It's a D-Link DWA140. It uses the Raylink 2870 driver. It's in the recent kernels, and there's also firmware for it. And I installed the firmware. I installed the driver, you know, set up the kernel for the driver, and I still get that where it can't scan. So what's the problem is between the driver and the firmware, it probably is not matching up exactly. So here we go again, another little buggy thing, so I got to get ironed out. So I might have to go with the latest driver and the latest firmware for that. So we'll see if that's another thing I got to work on, is getting this D-Link DWA140 working. The reason I wanted to get this a USB wireless is because I use a Nexus 1 phone, and we just got an update with the Android 2.2, and now you can use it for tethering, and also it has a Wi-Fi hotspot. You can turn it into a Wi-Fi hotspot. It works really well. You just turn on the Wi-Fi hotspot, and then you can just you just connect. It's just like an access point. You just connect right to it, and you don't even have to be connected to it or anything, not even with a USB tether or anything. And I've been using that at work. I had a one of those USB laptop connect cards from AT&T, because at my work, I work out of a trailer. There is no internet access there. There is a phone line, but it's not that great. And you can imagine, when you get used to at least some type of DSL or something, dial-up is just, forget about it. I just don't have the patience for it. So I was using that USB laptop connect modem. That was $79 per month. So now I could drop that and I can use my phone for everything. So that's pretty nice. That's really nice. And it works excellent. You just have to, it uses up a lot of the battery, so you just have to plug it in while you're using it as an access point. But anyhow, that's saving me $79 a month. That was pretty cool. So this podcast, well, what I'm going to talk about in this podcast is, as usual, fooling with all these computers. Things don't always go very smooth. And that test box that I was talking about, it has a 160 gigabyte Western Digital SATA hard drive. It's a relatively new box. I've had it about 6 or 8 months maybe. It's got an Intel motherboard, a cheap Intel motherboard. Well, not real cheap. It's not like the cheapest one, but it's a mid-range, let's say, Intel motherboard with that Core Quad processor and 8 gigabyte of RAM. And I didn't spend a whole lot of money on the hard drive. It was one of the cheaper ones, Western Digital, middle-of-the-line cheaper hard drive that I got from Newegg. I can't remember exactly how much it was. But I'm running GNOME on that test box, and it's up to 2.30, and there's a new application out that's called Disk Utility. And Disk Utility is pretty neat. Instead of mounting all your USB drives and external hard drives and anything else, you can open up this Disk Utility and you can manage all your external drives, even your CD players and that. You can mount your CD drive, or you can mount your another hard drive, or you can mount your USB disk. Instead of mounting everything on the desktop, it's an application. So you open this application and you can mount and unmount and manage all of your disk by this one application, and it works really well. I was looking through it, and it's being developed by Red Hat. So it was reporting that Western Digital Drive had bad sectors. The SMART of the drive was working correctly, and it reported to this Disk Utility that there was bad sectors. And I didn't do any configuration to set this up. It just did all this on its own when one of the upgrades that I did on that test box. And I had noticed that box was getting slower, and I didn't really know why. And the reason was because it was the hard drive was getting ready to fail, and so all of that reading and writing to disk was taking a long, long, long time. And I noticed that a few times before where it kind of almost seemed like it stopped. So I went ahead and ordered a good drive for that box. I'd been hearing rave reviews about these, another Western Digital. I'm a glutton for punishment, I guess. This one's actually 150 gigabyte, but it's a 10,000 RPM drive. It's called a Velocity Raptor, and it's a pretty expensive drive. It was $129, but it's had rave reviews on Newegg, and the only problem with it is, now I needed to back up or clone this 160 gigabyte drive, and the new drive I got is only 150 gigabyte. Now, I could have bought a 300 gigabyte drive, same type, but it was almost about twice as much, and I couldn't see spending $250, but I stretched it to spend $129. So, now what do? I got a 160 gigabyte drive, and that's bad, and I got to put the 160 onto a 150 gigabyte drive. Now, I know DD won't work with that. I was just going to use DD and, you know, go from the 160, just DD everything to the 150, but being the 150 is smaller, it'll just air out that there's no space left on the disk. So what I did was I got Gparted and Clonezilla. Now, first thing I did with Gparted was I used Gparted to go ahead and shrink that drive, the last partition on that drive. Now, in my installs, I have three partitions. I have the boot partition, which is usually very small, maybe 100 megabytes. And then I have the swap partition, which is, again, you know, relatively small, you know, between 2 and 4 gigabytes. And then everything else I use for the root partition, the root of the drive partition, not the root partition. So what I did was I took that 160 gigabyte drive and the third partition, I went ahead and shrunk it. It was currently it said it was 140 something. So I just went ahead and shrunk it down to 120. With Gparted. And then I wrote down exactly the partitions, the sizes of the partitions. And then as close as it would be, you know, it would work out, I went ahead and partitioned the 150 gigabyte drive with the boot, the swap, and the SD3 partition for the root of the install. Then I went ahead and fired up Clonezilla. Now in Clonezilla, it's got a few different options. The first two options you're going to run into is create an image or a backup image. And the other option is disk to disk. So I'm going disk to disk. So I've got the both hard drives hooked up naturally. So I'm going to go disk to disk. Basically what I do is I want to clone partition 1 and a partition 3 on the bad drive to partition 1 and partition 3 on the good drive. So that's what I did. So CloneZilla has another option. When you get into the disk to disk option, it opens up, and then there you can clone the whole disk, which wasn't going to work because they were of different sizes. Now, I think you can clone the disk if the first disk is smaller than the second disk is bigger. I believe you can do that. But what I did was I just cloned part. So you disk part. So you just clone partition to partition. I didn't need to clone the swap partition. So all I did was I cloned the first partition, which was the boot partition. Now this partition is the one that had the master boot record in it and grub and that. So I cloned that one. That one went pretty fast naturally because it was very small. And then the third one, I went ahead and cloned that, and that one took a while. When I used gparted and I shrunk that drive, that partition on that hard drive, that took about 3 or 4 hours, if I remember correctly. And this time when I copied over, it took probably maybe 20 or 30 minutes to copy the partition 3 to other partition 3. So now once I had that done, I went ahead and I wasn't sure if it would go ahead and install the master boot record and grub and all that, and if that would work or not. So I tried it, and no, it wouldn't boot because there was no grub, or grub wasn't installed or wasn't working right or something on the new drive. So I went ahead and booted up a live CD and went ahead and installed grub on that drive. And once I installed grub on that drive, then I went into the grub of the original drive and went ahead and, just to test, went ahead and put in a entry for the second hard drive to go ahead and boot the second hard drive, and it booted fine. So basically now all I need to do is to go ahead and pull that hard drive out, the bad drive, go ahead and hook the new drive up, and go ahead and change etc. fstab to SDA and instead of SDB, and go ahead and I would be able to go ahead and boot it right up, right straight from that one drive. But for right now, it's booting off the old drive, so I'm going to leave it like that and probably use that old drive, just let that old drive just sit there. It's not hurting anything, and it's making an excellent backup because it's already everything's on it as far as a backup is. So I'll just leave that there, just let that sit. The drive will probably just sit there fine without getting any use. The only thing I'm using is the first partition off of that drive to boot the third partition off of the new drive. So the bad sector errors that I was getting for the old drive was actually in the third partition. So the first partition is actually okay. I might be able to recover that drive if I wanted to use some of the Western Digital tools on that drive and see if it could fix the bad sectors. Or sometimes I think what those tools will do is it'll move the bad sectors out of the way and put them on the end of the disk. I believe that's what it'll do. But I don't really care. I'm just going to use that as a backup. It doesn't hurt to have a good backup. And what I can do then is I can rsync from the old drive to the new drive and go ahead and keep that third partition up to date. Set that up as a cron job. And like, let's say once a week or once every 2 weeks. And or you could do it nightly, but I don't leave that box on that much. So I'm just going to do it manually. Maybe once a week or once every 2 weeks, I'll go ahead and rsync the good drive third partition and rsync it to the bad drive third partition. That way it'll keep everything all up to date. So that's what I've been up to lately. What else has been going on? Gen 2 world, I've just been doing my normal little thing. Mainly I hang around on Bugzilla and try to fix a bug here and there, or doing a lot of learning. I'm still learning because I'm kind of new to all this. Bash and package maintainership, and just working with CVS and Git. So there's plenty to learn, plenty to keep me busy. Another big thing that's going on is the OpenRC, which is the RC update with Gen 2 is our part of our init scripts. Has been the man that was that originally developed it and everything. He's moving on, so it's been pretty interesting that Gen 2 has gone ahead and taken over maintainership of this very nice program. It's the fellows that are going to go ahead and invest their time keeping the program going and go ahead and update it and get it stabilized is Anarchy. He's a Gen 2 developer that takes care of all the Mozilla. Blueness, he's a newer developer. I don't really know him that well, but he's very active lately. And another fellow that I know, William H., that's the lead on the accessibility. You might have heard me talk about William H. before. He's the fellow I had an HP laptop that was just sitting here, wasn't really doing anything. It was kind of a new one. I got it real cheap off of eBay because it had a bad drive in it, and the people thought it was broken. And I had another drive laying around here. I put it in there, and it worked fine. So I went ahead and installed Gen 2 on it. And William was, he needed something for testing. So I said, well, this would work out pretty good. So I went ahead and shipped the laptop over to William. And it's been getting a lot of good use by William. William's been doing a lot of work with the laptop, he tells me. So that worked out good. And hopefully the OpenRC 0.6.1 will be stabilized here shortly. There's some bugs that need to be worked on first, but Blueness has kind of jumped in there and started really investigating the bug reports and working on the bugs. So I see in a few months should be able to get it stabilized. I'll help where I can. It's a pretty involved program. I mean, if you're a professional programmer, like William H. is a programmer that's what he does for a living. So he can figure that stuff out pretty good. Somebody like me that's just kind of a new programmer that just learned Python, it's only been programming for a year and a half. You know, a lot of this stuff is is basically over my head. So, but someone like William that's basically, he's a real programmer. I mean, that's what he does for his living. He's a C programmer, I know. And then he does other programming, I'm sure. You ask William H. a question, and he usually comes back pretty fast with the correct answer, or he can find it out. Oh, and one other thing before I go, the Gen 2 Council just got elected, a new council. And what the Gen 2 Council does is the elected Gen 2 Council decides on global issues and politics that affect multiple projects in Gen 2. It also serves as an appeal court for a disciplinary decision. The council members are elected for a year and must hold monthly public meetings. And they also take care of mainly the technical issues within Gen 2. They'll review any major changes that's going on as far as the code base and go ahead and make sure that the changes are in the direction that the majority of the developers would like to see things to go. And the new council members are Battle Guys, Pateri Rady. He is also the recruiter head, and he was the one that's handling my recruitment. We haven't been doing too much with it lately. I kind of stalled on it because I kind of realized that I think I need to go ahead and do a little more learning before I'm a full-fledged x86 developer. So I've kind of I haven't been really pushing it like I was pushing it before. We were up to the end quiz, like the third question. I pretty much know the answers to the questions, but my problem is I know the answers to the questions, but I don't know much else. So I really need to get a broader base as far as package development and being a package maintainer for Gentoo. I have a couple packages that I'm pretty much helping maintain, and that's given me some good learning experience. But I just need to spend some more time. It just takes time. It really takes a lot of time. I think maybe a lot of these other developers, they have a background in in basically programming and package development. A lot of these guys have come from other distros where they were working with package management already, or they were coming from a project that they even still work on. Maybe they worked on MySQL or another project, and then they went ahead and start helping out with Gentoo. So they have a background in developing software, whereas I have no background. So it's all new to me. So I was going to go ahead and just kind of take it easy, relax, and keep learning and see what happens next. So that's Battlegeist. So he's a long-term developer. He's been on the council before, I don't know how many times, a few times. He's the Java head. He does a lot of presentations at some of the bigger events. So very knowledgeable fellow. The other council member is Tony Varun, Chainsaw. I think he's, I'll probably get all of this wrong. I should do some research before I go through this, but I'll go ahead and wing it here. Let me go ahead and double check before I say it. Yeah, I would have been right. Yeah, it's Tony Varun. He's taking care of Asterix now, I know for sure. The Asterix had been neglected before. In fact, the latest stable was 1.2 here a while back. And he's brought it up to 1.4 and now 1.6. Went ahead and fixed up all the e-bells and stuff. He's been doing a lot of work with Asterix. I enjoy using Asterix a lot myself. I here at the house, I have my Asterix server running. But I have it running on a Gentoo box, but I didn't use the e-build or anything. I went ahead and I installed it from source. But this it's a 1.4. I do some bug fixes on it. It's been running in there for about, I don't know, three or four years on that Gentoo server here out of the house. Works fantastic. It's one of those things, if it's not broken, I'll go ahead and do the security bug fixes. But I just don't have time, or I just don't have the inclination to keep reinstalling this stuff over and over and over again. I just got too much stuff. I got that box there is a web server, FTP server, and the Asterix server, and then I have this box here that is basically my work box, and I want to keep it running because it's got all kind of stuff on here. It's the stuff I keep all my different scripts that I've been learning and saving, all of my work that I do as far as for my outside job I keep on this computer. I've got a bunch of Python scripts and stuff and little programs that I've written and learned on this computer. It's just got a little bit of everything on. I got a lot of open office documents and stuff. I got a lot of my trustees information I keep on here. I've got a ton of emails that I've got saved that I keep track of on this computer. So I really need this computer. Now this computer actually has it's a 250 gigabyte hard drive, but I got another 250 gigabyte hard drive that's exactly the same make and model and everything. So this one's really easy to keep backed up. So I just back up the one drive, the 250 gigabyte drive, to the other drive. So back to the council. So we got Pateri Reddy, which is Betelgeuse, and then we got Tony Varum that we were talking about that takes care of Asterix. He does a lot of other stuff, but I just know him from taking care of and fixing up the Asterix. His nickname's Chainsaw. Brian Herring. Brian Herring just recently came back to Gentoo as a developer. He's the developer of PackageCore, which is a program similar to Portage. It's written in Python. It's a little more slimline, a little less, I guess you would say, cruft that's developed over the years on Portage. It's a little cleaner, cleaner than Portage. His nickname is F-E-R-R-I-N-G-B, Faringb. And he, like I said, he recently came back. I'm pretty sure he used to be the maintainer of Portage years ago, and also maybe he was the Python head. I'm not exactly positive. But he's a real professional programmer. He's very knowledgeable, and he's got some ideas for the council to get the council more involved with the community, and all of the council members do. I think the biggest thing the council just needs to do is just basically just spend more time. It's tough when you're volunteering your time, and you have a meeting once a month. And really, you don't have that much time, because really, Gentoo's not going to be first on the list. Gentoo's going to be number three for most people, unless you're lucky enough that the company you work for hires you to work for Gentoo. So you got first is going to be the family, you know, and the other stuff, the other important stuff, family, whatever your religion is, or even if you don't have a religion. So family and stuff like that's going to be number one. Number two is going to be your job, because without a job, you're not going to be able to pay the bills. You're not going to be able to have a computer to even run Gentoo on. So you'll be sleeping underneath the tree and eating out of a garbage can or something. So you got to, number two is the job. And then, you know, maybe three is Gentoo, but a lot of times Gentoo is not even three. Maybe three is a hobby you have that you enjoy doing, like, I don't know, playing golf or going skiing in the mountains or going out, people have hobbies like going out with girls or going out with guys. I mean, that can take up a lot of time. So maybe Gentoo's not number three. Maybe Gentoo's number four or five on the list. So, you know, it just takes a lot of time. The new council are some people that already do spend a lot of time volunteering for Gentoo. So I have an idea that it's going to be a pretty active council session this next year. So Brian Herring, great to have him back. Very knowledgeable. He's going to be a great, 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 great asset for Gentoo. Mark Lozer, Halcyon, very experienced developer with Gentoo. He's been around for a long time. He again, let me double check just to make sure here. Yeah, he's part of the toolchain herd. So that's one of the core developers that takes care of, you know, the tool chain for Gentoo. I see him on the infra a lot too. That's the infrastructure of Gentoo. I think he has something to do there too also. So, and I'm sure, I apologize ahead of time, I'm sure I forgot parts that he is involved in. Another thing I know he's very involved in is quality assurance. He's part of the QA team to try to keep everything very, very quality orientated, and try to keep the tree as pristine as possible. That's a full-time job right there. So that's Halcyon. Next guy is Jorge Manuel B.S. Vicento. I did a podcast interview with him, JMBS Vicento. He's the KDE lead, and very knowledgeable guy. He started out helping out with Gentoo, I don't know how many years ago. It's been a while, as far as on the forums, being a forum moderator. And he got involved with helping some of the teams. I don't know if he started out helping KDE, probably helping who knows what all. He does a lot of work for Gentoo now. He does a lot of that KDE work. He's been working with Robert too, in order to get the MySQL e-builds all fixed up and updated, and I'm sure there's a whole lot more stuff that he does. He's pretty busy in his regular job. He works for a big hospital district out in the middle of the Atlantic, and so that keeps him very busy. But he spends a lot of time. He comes in spurts. You can tell that his job and his family take up some of his time at times, because he'll be, you maybe not be around for 2 or 3 days, and then he'll be really, really busy for a week or 2 weeks or 3 weeks, and then, you know, maybe something comes up for as far as work or his family that takes a little of his time, and then he's back at it again. The other developer that was elected is Thomas Chavatel. That's a Scarabos, longtime Gentoo developer, very knowledgeable, a Bash guru. He's helped me a lot of times with e-build. When I was going through the Spam Assassin e-build, trying to get it, to go ahead and get it, Spam Assassin updated to the latest versions, and it just been kind of just sitting in the tree for a long time. He really helped me go through quality assurance and help me with the e-build and getting it all fixed up. He spent a lot of time with me one-on-one doing that. It was very helpful to me, very helpful to Gentoo, but he does that a lot. He helps a lot of people, very involved in Gentoo, and great to have him on the council. He was a big, big asset. The other new member of the council, well, Scarboros was there last year. The new ones are Chainsaw, Ferengi, Halcyon, JBN Vincento, and the next one guy I'm going to introduce is Wired. So the ones, it's nice that we've got a couple developers that are carryovers. Battle Guys, he's a carryover. And Scarabos, he's a carryover. So Wired, Alex Alexander, very involved. I want to say a younger fellow, because most people are younger than me. I don't know if he's in his mid to late 20s. But he's involved all over the place. He's very knowledgeable. He's kind of been really helping out with the KDE. And just so I don't do anything wrong, let me check here again just a second. Yeah, it says here on the developer list is QT and KDE, but he does a lot of other stuff. I see him all over the place. Very knowledgeable. So that's a very, very good and solid Gentoo council. And I think most of the personalities will be able to get along, which is a big deal in any of these group settings, as far as you get 6 or 7 people that are really all kind of different backgrounds and different opinions getting together, and getting them all to work together for one common goal is the trick. And these all seem like pretty strong people as far as wanting to get things done for Gentoo. So I think with all of them heading in the same direction, pulling on the rope together, I think they can get some good stuff done in this next year. The trustees, I'm a member of the trustees, as far as the trustees to look out for the interest of the Gentoo Foundation. And we all get along really good. It's a pretty good group of people on the trustees. So our meetings are really nice, and we get a lot done, and everybody has their own little specialty. The only one that really doesn't have much of a specialty, I'm always bad mouthing myself here, but you're just trying to be honest. My only thing specialty as far as the trustees is, because I'm so new at this, like, I don't really know that much about patents, and I don't really know as far as the legalities. But I guess I don't really have to. We refer most of our questions, if it's serious, to someone that is more knowledgeable and more of an expertise in that field. But there's a few members of the trustees that are pretty knowledgeable. Nettie Seagoon, I'm not exactly sure what he's doing now, but you can tell that he has been in upper management as far as being able to run a large corporation, that type of thing. So he's very good at kind of being the lead and kind of keeping things going in the right direction. And also he's very personable, so it kind of keeps everybody in good spirits, and people don't really argue and get mad at each other, any of that good stuff. We're basically just trying to get the job done. You got Robert Two, which is one of the infrastructure leads. So he's a very more technical type individual, programmer by trade. He does just about everything. He's the one that he's like Mr. Infrastructure for Gentoo. Now you got you got a lot of other very important people to take care of the Gentoo infrastructure. I don't want to make it sound like Robin Two is the only guy, which he isn't. His co-lead is King Taco, and King Taco is like the mainstay. He's a guy you could go over there to, and very, very smart guy, very knowledgeable. He can pretty much fix anything in a matter of seconds, basically minutes or seconds. Very, very knowledgeable. Then you got Solar. I mean, he's another professional administrator. I mean, these type of people administer not two or three little servers like I do. These are type of people that administer hundreds, maybe thousands of servers, you know. So they're the type of people that can have, 10, 20, 30 people under them taking care of thousands and thousands of infrastructure servers and stuff like that, databases. You name it, they can do it. Yeah. Then you got IDLOR. He's over infrastructure. Now, he does a lot of other stuff. That's Christian Rupert. See, my pronunciation with this, I hope everybody forgives me for my pronunciation. Now, I say Christian, I do fine with that. Rupert. But the pronunciation of this other, you got to realize you got a country bumpkin here that I can't even hardly speak English, more or less trying to pronounce these foreign names. So you just have to bear with me on this. Who else is over there at the infrastructure? Well, I mentioned Halcyon. I mentioned Robert 2, Solar. Well, Ramrath, he's a retired developer, but he's basically still a developer. He works at Oregon State University, where Gentoo has a bunch of their core servers and stuff. And he is, he's a retired dev. But he's basically still helps out Gentoo a lot. That's pretty much about it as far as the new council. And I don't know. I can't really think of anything else. I've pretty much rambled on for a pretty good while. So hopefully I'll be able to edit this with stupid Pulse Audio acting up so that I can at least get all of my hiccups and all of my ums and all that different stuff eliminated, so at least I can get it halfway cleaned up. I really like this new setup I got. I'll take a picture and put it up on the website. I got a pop filter for my microphone. I got this Steinheiser E835, and it's a great microphone. And also with this pop filter, I haven't had to worry about, pronunciation. I can go ahead and say pop filter, and it's not going to freak out or anything. So it's a very nice setup. I use this M-Audio USB sound device that the microphone plugs into, and it works fine. I could put the speakers to this device here and just use it, which I might do. But now I got to buy speakers for it. I mean, it's terrible that Pulse Audio won't cooperate with me, and then I got to go be spending extra money just to work around the defects of Pulse Audio. And I'm not intelligent enough. I'm not a C programmer enough to go in there and edit the code and to fix it up. I think it would probably is fixable if I could go in there and edit it just for my application and get rid of whatever it's making it mess up. What it's doing again is, maybe somebody has an idea, what it's doing again is it just flies through again. You know, instead of, it plays back, but it's just going 800 miles an hour. So I've heard of this bug before. I've had this bug before, and it's worked itself out, but I'll just have to investigate it again. It's nothing more demoralizing or aggravating is when you think you got it working and it's working fine for a month or two, and then all of a sudden it goes right back to the way it was doing before. All right, I've done enough of my ranting and raving. I'll try to get another podcast out in a couple weeks. I got a couple good ideas for some interviews, so if I get up off my rear end and go ahead and start contacting some people and putting together another interview, I've got a couple pretty good people in mind for interviews, so Hopefully I'll get moving on that. So, all right, I'll talk to y'all later. Bye-bye. All right, I got an update. I think I got it figured out here. Well, I don't have it figured out, but I got a way I can use this USB sound card. It actually has a headphone connection on it. And I've got a pretty nice set of headphones, so I hooked up these headphones to the SimAudio USB sound card. It's actually called a Podcast Factory. It's a USB sound card that I hook my microphone into, but actually it works well with the headphones. So I won't even have to play Audacity through the speakers. I can just do my editing through the headphones, which is probably the way it's supposed to be done anyhow. I just never even thought of it till I was like trying to think of something I was going to do. And then I said, well, heck, I'll just plug these headphones into this M-Audio USB device and see what happens. And it's working fine. So, all right. So I'm back in business. All right. Bye.